How about a warm Shepherd's Inn welcome for our brother? Perfect. Say something and make sure we can hear you.
Hello? Yep, they can hear me. I'm just waiting for the lady to get in here. All right, so I'm going to share my testimony. So, kind of what happened to me was I was sleeping in a neighbor's backyard in a tent. There was me and my older brother, older sister, and then two of my sister's friends. And the neighbors had a teenage son. Those of us in the tent were ages 5 to 10. I was 5. And it was a long weekend, and some teenagers came by the tent, and they had a bunch of firecrackers with them. So they thought the neighbor's older son was in there. So they lit some of the firecrackers and threw them into the tent. And according to the police, one of the firecrackers must have caught some bedding on fire. And the tent went up in flames. Now, my older sister didn't make it. She didn't even make it to the hospital. And one of her friends didn't make it. And I wasn't supposed to make it. But God had other plans. So since I was so young, you know, the doctors didn't figure I'd make it. I lost all my fingers because, or at least most of them, most of every finger, because gangrene set in. So the doctors had to amputate. And then they told my parents that I'd always be completely handicapped and dependent on them for the rest of my life. But they neglected to tell me that. So I went through a lot of surgeries. I spent 3 years in a children's hospital that had a school and a hospital. Just because, you know, it was convenient. It was just right across the street from the big hospital, so I'd sometimes have to go there for surgeries, and then I would go back to the children's hospital to recoup while going to school. And somewhere in there, someone told me that, you know, probably trying to be kind and break it to me that there are certain things I wouldn't be able to do. They said, you know, you'll probably never be able to ride a bike. And so I went home, probably that same day, and said, I need a bike. I don't think I consciously thought through this. I was probably 7 by then. You know, that I don't think I consciously thought through that you can't figure out if you can do something until you try it. And these people didn't try it for me, and I hadn't tried it, so I needed to try it. I don't think I had that conscious thinking, but I just probably, A, didn't like the fact that they figured something I wouldn't be able to do. For no reason that I could think of. So I got a bike for the next Christmas. And of course, it came with training wheels, and I rode it around and around the house because it was my birthday's in the winter. And then in spring, you know, my dad said, well, you know, we should take the training wheels off, and I crashed and crashed and crashed. And then I said, you know, can you put the training wheels back on? And my dad said, well, I think you can do this, and I did. Now, I used to, see, when I was young, I was still figuring out how to do things. And I hadn't become quite as adept at doing things. So how I'd ride a bike is I'd wrap my arm around the handlebar and squeeze like this. So I'd be way over the front of the bike, and that worked fine until, you know, I hit one of those water main dips in the road and went right over the handlebars. And then I thought, okay, we got to rethink this. See, now my parents were always encouraging. If I said, hey, you know, I want to ride a bike, they'd get me a bike. And if I wanted to do, you know, they never said, you know, we don't think you'll be able to do that. I think they just thought, hey, we'll get him that, and he can figure out if he can do it or not. And yeah, there's certain things I can't do. Just because I don't have, you know, my long fingers. So anything you need to be able to grab one thing here and one thing here, that's can be a little tough, but not impossible necessarily. Now, when I was 10, a lady stopped to talk to me while I was playing in my backyard. And she had friends in that area, so every so often she'd come by and talk to me. And then she invited me to church. And so my mom and my brother, we went to this Pentecostal church. And I started going to Sunday school. And when I was 11, the Sunday school teacher asked me if I'd like to invite Jesus into my heart. And I don't think I understood what that was or what it meant. All I knew was that I felt a warmth in church that I didn't feel anywhere else. And so I said yes, and he stepped me through it, and I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but you know, God honored that, and he was faithful. Now, I had to go a whole process of, you know, dealing with my appearance. And at first, whenever I'd go out, you know, kids would want to know why I was dressed up for Halloween. And I remember not really enjoying that. And then in my early 20s, you know, if I still encountered that, I really hated it. But God kind of brought me to the place where I learned to just cast all that on Him. He brought me to the place where, you know, I got to a place where I had to sit down and think, okay, do I like how I look? And my answer was no. But I realized, you know, I liked who I'd become in the Lord. And so I decided I would accept my appearance, because, you know, each one of us, our appearance isn't who we are, it's just what we look like. And, you know, it was kind of after I got to that place where I accepted myself for who I was and what I looked like, that I wasn't really affected then by how people reacted to me in public and And God's definitely brought me a long ways, because I went off to boarding school when I was 16. Left home and after the first year, the people there said, you're really starting to come out of your shell. And I'm like, what shell? And they're like, well, the first year you came here, you just walked around looking at the ground. And now you're starting to walk around looking up. And, oh. See, I didn't even notice that myself. And somewhere, I think it was in Bible school, that I received the infilling of the Holy Spirit. And I think it's God's presence that, I go out in public now, I don't get hardly any of that, wondering what happened to me or why I'm dressed up like it's Halloween or... Plus, I think it helps that I don't walk around, looking at the ground, and I actually look people in the eye. And and a lot of people are drawn, not to me, but to the presence of the Lord in my life. In the last few years, God's kind of been teaching me to believe things by faith. And I remembered, maybe 10 years ago, I started waking up in the middle of the night, just my eyes would be in excruciating pain. And I went and saw a specialist, and he said, it's because your lower eyelid is just not covering enough of the eyeball. And so, the tissue in there would just swell up, and it was extremely painful. So I went and saw a plastic surgeon who said, we could fix that, but because it's a small area and because scar tissue contracts and shrinks, they said you'd have to come back every 2-3 years to get it done again. So I took it to the Lord and I said, well, Lord, they can't fix it. They can only temporarily make it better, and then I'll have to always be going through surgeries. So I said, I'm going to give my eyes to you, and you take care of them. Now, the pain didn't go away immediately, but I'd wake up in the morning, and if my eyes were hurting, instead of squeezing them or rubbing my eyes, the Lord said, now, how would you act if your eyes felt normal? And I said, well, I just wouldn't do anything. And he said, okay, do that. And I'd say within a couple weeks, my eyes stopped swelling up, the pain didn't come back anymore. And so I recalled that, in the last few years when the Lord's been teaching me to live by faith, how, about that incident. And in 2013, I went on a train trip to Manitoba. And my skin flared up, and that had never happened. And I went to the doctor, and they said, that's eczema. Here's some medication, it'll get rid of it. And it's stress-induced. And I took the medication for 3 years, and it didn't get rid of any of it. And then I decided I was going to believe the word in 2 Peter 2:24 that says, by his wounds you are healed. Well, that's how I translate it anyway. Because it says, by his wounds you were healed, and if you were, then you are. And so I stopped taking the medication in, I think, 2016. And within a year, most of it had cleared up. The medication hadn't done that. And so I thought, well, hey, you know, all these other areas that the doctors can't do anything about it, I'm going to believe that they're going to clear up. And so that's kind of the process that I'm in. And then he's been teaching me about believing him for finances. And at least right now I'm on government assistance. Now, the one I'm on is for handicapped people, and they do pay me monthly, but they limit how much you can have as in assets. So they'll say, okay, you're allowed one car and the home that you live in. And other than that, you know, you can only have $100,000 in assets. And our family at that time owned a cabin out in the woods, and we built it, and my mom was the primary owner, but she didn't want to have to deal with house decisions. So she said, well, would you put your name on it? And that was before I ever got government assistance. And so I did. But then when I got close to that threshold where, you know, I would have too many assets, I took my name off and switched it over to my sister-in-law, so that because my brother was on there by then, so I figured the two of them could have all the property owner headaches. I'd get rid of that, and I'd stay on government assistance. And then November of 2017, they did their periodic checks where they asked, you know, to see all my financials, and I send them all in. And then the next letter I got was saying that they were closing my file. That's their kind way of saying, we're cutting off your income. And so I phoned them. And explained what had happened. And they said, okay, well, you're going to have to write down why you sold this property. And it can't be because you wanted to stay on government assistance. And it's going to have to go before a panel that's not going to believe that you would do it for any other reason than to stay on government assistance. And so I sat down and I thought about writing a letter. And I said, well, Lord, the reason I took my name off there was so I could stay on government assistance. And they're saying I'm not allowed to stay on government assistance. So I'm not going to write a letter saying anything else, because that's lying. And I left it in his hands, and I was willing to just believe that he would take care of my finances. And the only thing that I felt that I should do was call my local MLA. And they said, okay, we'll make some calls and we'll let you know. And a couple weeks went by, and I got a call from a deputy, an assistant deputy, I think, in the government's office, from their troubleshooter, who said, you know, I just phoned the government assistance people. You're reinstated. And all we need you to do is send them a copy of the, you know, property deed showing that your name is not on there anymore. And I told that to someone, and they said, you know, that's quite remarkable, because the government doesn't go to fight for anybody that they don't know. And so I just give God all that glory, because he's the only one that can orchestrate that. Let me check my time here. Okay. It's kind of when that happened that something in me changed where I didn't want to be on government assistance anymore. I wanted... you know, to believe that God could take care of all of my needs. And so I'm believing, and I don't know how that will happen, but I'm believing that that will happen, and I'll be off government assistance. And then I'll have another good testimony to share. Now, I did have a job for years and years working for the CAA, Canadian Automobile Association, and I started in their sales department, and I ended up at the end in their customer service department. And after 17 years, I burnt out, and I couldn't do it anymore. Couldn't physically do it anymore. Now, 4 years before this, I've been feeling that, you know, this job wasn't using all the talents that the Lord had given me. So I went to him one day and said, "Now, you know, what do you want me to do?" And he said, "I want you to write a book." And I'm like, "Well, anything else I could do?" Because, you know, ever since I was a young lad, I liked the idea of writing a book. But when I was in college, I'd written short stories. And a 30-page short story, I found, was kind of my limit. So, for 2 weeks, I said, "No thanks." And then I realized that it has to do what God wanted me to do. So I said, "All right, Lord, I will write a book about my life if you'll help me." And he did. But while I was writing that book, you know, I was getting other book ideas. And so when I started learning out at work, God gave me the peace to just kind of walk away from my job and just write full time. And for 2 years, I wrote full time. I had no income coming in. And it's just amazing how God works, because I quit my job. I had a little bit saved, but not much. And I asked the Lord, you know, how much should I pay myself? And every month from my savings. And he tells me a figure that's about $700 a month less than what I was making. And I still have to pay for my food and my rent and my car insurance and gas. And So I started paying myself that. And then a short time, maybe 6 months, maybe a year later, he said, "Okay, you can raise it $50 a month." I'm like, "Nice." And then a few months after that, my rent went up by $50. And I'm like, "So now what do I do, Lord? Do I raise it another 50? And he's like, "No, drop it 50. So basically, that was $100 loss. And yet, you know, God was amazing, because when I worked full-time, I had wanted, you know, winter tires, but it seemed every month I didn't have any money left after the bills to buy winter tires. And yet when I quit my job and I'm paying myself a lot less, I could afford the winter tires. And then I was renting a bedroom in a basement. And it was fine when I worked full-time and just came home in the evening, but when I was in that room all day long, especially in the summer, it got really hot. So I'm like, "Well, you know, can I get an air conditioner?" And the Lord didn't say anything. And then a little while later, maybe a month later, he said, okay, go get an air conditioner. And A, the air conditioners were all on sale at that time. But B, there was a heat wave going on, and the whole city was sold out. So I said, well, Lord, what do I do? He said, well, you know, go to this place website and find one. So I go there and I find one and I put it in order because it said they had them in stock. And then I found out the reason they weren't sold out is because they were shipping from Ontario, who wasn't having a heat wave. And just these things that, you know, I could suddenly afford on much less income. I think that's why when my government disability got cut off, that I figured the Lord would take care of me. So it's been quite a journey with the Lord. You know, when I felt a peace to walk away from my job, because the other scene, that Indiana Jones movie, I think it was the first one, where he's following these clues and he's supposed to walk from one entryway to another entryway, and all that he sees between the two is a chasm. But kind of what he was reading, you know, said to scatter some sand. And it wasn't until he scattered the sand that he saw there was a stone bridge across. But he still had to step out, believing that it was solid and that it extended beyond what he could see the sand on. And that's kind of what it was like when I finally stepped away from my job, was stepping out in space and finding that there was solid ground there. So, yeah, so I have a good life in the Lord, and I can do pretty much everything that needs doing. And I give him all the glory and the honor.
Hey, let's stand together. Stay right here. Is it be okay if we pray for you?
Yeah.
Be all right? Well, family, what an inspiration.
Yeah.
Huh?